Homeward is committed to partnering with parents and equipping you with the resources you need to raise your kids to become responsible adults. And Steadfast Companies, a leading real estate investment company, is proud to partner with Homeward to bring you the following podcast presentation.
Now's our chance to be bad.
If I cross over the line, I know there's a consequence.
Man, what's gotten into you?
When you don't provide the consequence, they just keep expanding the boundaries.
If you take our cartoons away, we'll grow up without a sense of humor and be robots.
Really? What kind of robots?
The wisdom of Bart and Lisa Simpson kind of juxtaposed against the wisdom of Jim Daly from Focus on the Family today here on the Homeward broadcast as we are getting ready for Father's Day and in celebration of that day when we honor the men who are called to lead families and raise kids. We're talking about becoming the father you are meant to be, establishing the boundaries that need to be set at home, and overcoming some of the obstacles that every guy had to work through in the home that you were raised in, whether you had a good dad or a not-so-great dad or an absent dad or a distant dad. Today here on the Homeward broadcast, parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns having a conversation with Jim Daly from Focus on the Family on becoming the father you were meant to be. Roger Marsh here in the studios of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family on the campus of Azusa Pacific University. And now here's Jim.
Welcome to Homeward. I'm Jim Burns. Today we're talking about becoming the father you were meant to be. And I can't think of a better person. Jim Daly is with us. He's the president of Focus on the Family. He is the author of many popular books, including a brand new book called The Good Dad, Becoming the Father You Were Meant to Be. And actually, I'm holding it, and I just read it, and I love the book. He's married to Jean, been married to Jean for nearly 30 years, and the Dalys make their home in Colorado Springs with their two sons. And as I mentioned, he's the president of Focus on the Family and actually one of my favorite people. And I think he's one of the people, at least in my life, as I look at leaders that I respect and admire the most. I love this man, and I appreciate his leadership and what he stands for and who he is. So, Jim, it's an honor to have you on our broadcast.
Jim, with that introduction, man, how could I say no?
Well, actually, we are so grateful that, and we know you're busy, you got a lot of great things going on, and yet, you know, here you write a book on being the good dad and, you know, what a dad you have been. And yet, at the same time, not too long ago, you wrote in one of your blogs, "Should Father's Day be outlawed?" What was the kind of response you got to that?
Hey, you know, actually, it was positive. The response was, and you know, the bottom line is, dads seem to be when you look at moms and dads, dads seem to be the source of both great joy and great pain.
Yes,
it's like an amplifier. Mom works in this zone that's right in the middle. Moms tend to be predictable. They're the ones who, they'll always love us. They'll always patch our knees. They'll always make us a good a cup of soup, whatever it might be. Moms tend to be the nurturer and the one that holds it all together for children. And that's a great thing. Dads are the outliers. And so we work more in that in the margin where I don't know how dad's going to react, or dad hit me, or dad abused me. And so I think that was the reaction we got. We got a lot of response, and it was either really positive or really negative.
Yeah. No, you know, I remember speaking at Promise Keepers, and that was the topic that I was talking about. Mm. And the amount of dads who said, well, I didn't really have a dad. I didn't really have a model. I just had this kind of more absent father, and, you know, I don't really remember much about him. And yet others would say the most important influence in my life is dad. And, you know, it goes both ways, doesn't it?
It really does. And I think, you know, that's one of the big things when you look at just the culture and where we're at. Look at some of the biggest problems we're facing. 85% of men in prison didn't have a dad involved with them at home.
Right.
71% of teen suicides, no father involved with them in the home. And the stats just go on and on. Children at risk, 80% of them didn't have a father in the home. So when you look at the silver bullet, what we need to do as a culture to help strengthen family and thus strengthen culture, dads being engaged with their families, it's the number one thing we need to do.
I absolutely agree. And yet, it's interesting coming out of your mouth because, you know, your story is an interesting story. I mean, you had a father, you had a stepfather, you had a foster dad. You know, briefly, help us understand where you're coming from after making the statement that, you know, dads are that important. You didn't really grow up with the normal Ozzie and Harriet dad.
That's one way to say it. No, I had a typical dysfunctional biological father and mother. And, you know, my dad was an alcoholic. And when I was five, he came home drunk one night, swinging a hammer, saying he was going to kill my mother. My older brother slipped out, called the police. He was arrested. And that was the end of our family. And so my mom moved often with the five kids in tow until she remarried. And she remarried when I was eight. When I was nine, a year, year and a half later, she died of cancer. And my stepdad, Hank, left the day of the funeral. Yes. Then I ended up in foster care. And within 6 months, Mr. Real told the social worker I had tried to kill him. And I mean, it was all fabricated. There might be somebody listening saying, well, did you? No. But, you know, the thing about it, by 10, I was already well acquainted with the fact that adults can't tell the truth. And that's kind of destabilizing to a child. When you're the guy in the room that is the only one that knows reality and you're only nine.
Wow.
That's a little troubling.
No. So you know, you go on, you move on, you have an incredible story. You and Jean, you know, get pregnant, and you're now going to be a father, and you really didn't exactly have the role model of a dad. What were you feeling when you knew you were going to be a dad for the first time?
Yeah, it was scary. I mean, we waited in part because both Jean and I felt, you know, apprehensive about parenthood. So we were in our late 30s. When we had Trent, and I remember when he was born, Jean, understandably, she was exhausted. She had 27 hours of labor.
Oh, my goodness.
And so every woman listening just went, oh, no.
Yes.
And, you know, so I took Trent in the birthing room. I took Trent after they checked him out, cleaned him up, and they brought him back. And I held him all night long in the rocking chair next to Jean's bed.
Wow.
And I prayed, and I cried, and I sang little songs as Jean was asleep. And Trent was just being a one-day-old baby. And, you know, it just really, it was a night of, I would say, Jim, it was a night where I pledged myself to him to be a good father. And we're not going to always do everything right. I purposely didn't say, be the perfect dad.
Yeah.
Because that can't happen. We only have one perfect father, and he's in heaven. And what we need to be is the good dad.
No, I really appreciate the difference, because there are so many times where I feel as a dad, now my kids are in their 20s, but as a dad, I feel like I did a good job. And then another time I go, oh, I didn't, I don't even know what I'm doing. And part of it is because, as you talk about in your book, The Good Dad, we don't really have a clearly defined job description for fatherhood, for a lot of people anyway.
No, we don't. And I think over the last, you know, three decades or so, we've concentrated, understandably, we've concentrated on the role of mom, the importance of mom, the need for mom to do other things and work in the home and all those things. And we've been very focused on women. And that's a good thing. I'm not detracting from that at all. But there needs to be a time now when we think about, what is the role of fatherhood? Are they just, as many would say, sperm donors? Or are we really, are we equipped and capable of participating in child rearing? I think the answer is resoundingly yes.
Yeah.
We have a role to play, but it's not very well understood. Yet the impact we're seeing in the culture every day.
Yeah, and what's fascinating about that is because we inherently know we're supposed to do something, but we haven't really had a lot of role models. You didn't have role models growing up. My father also had an alcoholic background. He was a good guy. He stayed with my mom. There are certain things that were good about it, but, you know, there just isn't really this whole job description. And so, but yet we want our kids to thrive. But what you're saying in your book is that sometimes our kids learn, well, really more from their failures than from their successes.
Well, that was my experience. I mean, as I was sitting there in that rocking chair that night, I'm thinking, how in the world am I going to know how to be a good father? I've had three fathers, and all of them were horrible fathers.
Right.
And it was just, you know, first of all, that relationship with Christ. He comforted my heart that night, just saying, you know what? You can do it. I'm going to help you. And, you know, so you learn those principles through the book of Proverbs and learning how to teach your child right and wrong and those kinds of things. And you need to rely on that, especially those of us in the Christian community. And then I think the other key thing is there are some natural instincts that we just need to follow. I think in the culture today, we're trying to make too many moms out of dads.
Yeah.
And we're not allowing dads to simply be dads. And that means, you know what, for wives, when dad has the kids on Saturday and they have not followed the nutritional guidelines of the USDA, and they had pizza. And guess what? After the pizza, they had a milkshake, and after that, they had more ice cream.
Right.
And then they had hot dogs for dinner.
Right.
Just be thankful Dad fed them. And, you know, you can talk about nutritional value when your head's at the pillow, and a nice little nudge to your husband to say, next time, could you think about a little spinach? But you know what? Dads need to be dads, and I think wives actually will be happier when dads are dads.
Yeah, you even used the word get messy, you know, not just a nice, safe, clean home. I mean, that's what we do want, but, you know, sometimes you have to just get messy. And not just talking about, you know, the food or whatever, but, you know, life's messy.
It is. I think the other key thing, Jim, is that men, we talk about that bar of perfection. Men are very performance-oriented. Every woman's laughing now that I just said that. And, you know, whether it's the bedroom or the office, we're always thinking about where we're at and are we measuring up. And the reality is, when it comes to fatherhood, moms tend to be pre-wired. I mean, I'm jealous for that because moms are so well integrated. They typically, not everyone, but typically have such good nurturing hearts. They know what children need. They know when they have to pat the child on the head or encourage or feed or train or say just the right word. Dads were not as adept at that. And if mom gets on us, we tend to retreat. We pull back. If we're not getting that of boys, you know, I played quarterback in high school. When I threw a touchdown pass, man, the coach was in my face saying, "You are awesome. You are good. What a great pass that was. You threaded the needle." What did that make me want to do? Man, I want to go out and throw another bomb that gets a touchdown. And I think when we're in the fathering role, it's usually, "You didn't do that," or "Why couldn't you have said this?" And we get a lot of criticism because it's not so natural to us. And what do? We pull back. Well, you do it. You're better at it than I am.
Exactly. That makes so much sense. By the way, the reason I was not a good quarterback in high school is because the coach would go into my face and say, "Burns, you threw another interception. This is the third one of the game." So maybe that was the difference between your football career and my football career. Listen, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Jim Daly with us. He's the president of Focus on the Family. What a joy and a privilege and an honor to have one of, I think, America's great Christian leaders with us. And I really always enjoy having Jim with us.
Oh, yeah. And we're having too much fun here in the studio today on the Homeward broadcast. Roger Marsh here in the studios of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family on the campus of Azusa Pacific University, where we graduate difference makers and have since 1899. APU.edu for more information on that. Today, the conversation centering on becoming the father you are meant to be. Jim Daly's new book is called The Good Dad, and you'll find a link to it up at our website at homeward.com. And now the conclusion of today's edition of the Homeward broadcast. Here once again, Dr. Jim Burns.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Burns. What a privilege to have Jim Daly with us and talking about one of the most, I think, important subjects we could ever talk about, and that's becoming the father you were meant to be. And the interesting side to it is it's not easy. We don't have the job description. But the truth is that we can, and I think we are, becoming better fathers. And I appreciate so many of the women who listen to Homeward and so many of the other great programs like Focus on the Family that actually are encouraging their husbands to do the job because it does make a difference. Jim, you said in your book, and I loved the book so much, and you said something that I thought was interesting. You had a time where you had to discipline Trent, and you ask him a question. You said, "How do you feel when I discipline you?" And I thought Trent's response to you was interesting.
Well, you know, one of the things I noticed was the difference between Trent and Troy, my two boys. Trent's the older and Troy the younger. And when I would physically need to discipline them, if I were giving them a spank because of rebellion or, you know, whatever severe thing they had done, Troy, the younger one, he was great. He'd smile almost, say, "Okay, Dad, thanks, I got it, see you next time." And he'd run off. And I was going, "Wow, that kid's incredible." Trent, it was like I was crushing his spirit. Like I was communicating something in there that went well beyond just a little pat on the butt. And what ended up happening, one time I followed him up to the room and I had that conversation. He wouldn't talk to me. He'd only shake his head. And I said, "If I get you a pen and paper, will you write the answer?" And he shook his head up and down. And so I went and got the paper, came back. I said, "When Daddy disciplines you with a spanking, how does it make you feel?" And he jotted a note, and I read it, and I went, "Oh." And he said, "It makes me feel like you don't love me." And I realized at that point, maybe that wasn't the most effective tool in my arsenal as a parent. And what I quickly did is I said, you know, to my wife, Jean, I said, let's begin taking things away from him, toys that he likes to play with, instead of physical discipline. And it worked really well. And he responded, and it wounded him more emotionally to have that happen than to have a spanking.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Yeah.
And I mean wounded in the right way. I mean mentoring his behavior. And it is, and I think it's part of that bent of your child. As a parent, you got to know your child well enough, because some kids, they can't comprehend that. You know, it is kind of odd that we instruct them not to strike back at the little boy or little girl in elementary school. And then when they do something wrong, we spank them.
Right.
They understand that stuff. And it doesn't mean that some children don't respond well to spankings. I'm not saying that. That's an okay discipline measure. But more importantly is, how does your child respond?
Yeah. And each child is different. We have to learn how we discipline them. We have to learn how we talk to them differently. And yet that's hard, because I had no idea that. Our Christy is our oldest, and so we did the discipline. We're figuring out. We were experimenting on her, if she really do. And then Rebecca comes along with a totally different personality, and really we had to figure out how to discipline her in a different way. One of the things that we had to do with all of them, though, was be consistent. And you talk about the gift of consistency, whether it be in discipline or any of the other aspects. Talk about consistency as a dad.
Well, again, I think we either are the disciplinarians, you know, wait till your father gets home, we're just not present for that, and mom does it all. And we've got to be in a good balance with our spouse. We've got to be in a place where both are being consistent with the boundaries. And what you and Dr. Dobson and many other experts, PhDs, what they'll tell us is that those boundaries and the consistency around those boundaries is so vitally important, because children learn to trust that. If I cross over the line, I know there's a consequence. And when you don't provide the consequence, they just keep expanding the boundaries until you wake up one day and your 15, 16-year-old is into at-risk behavior like drugs and alcohol. And it's not always linked in that way, but so often it is, because they didn't understand the boundaries, or the boundaries were reinforced, and I didn't know what not to do, so I just did all I could do. And that's a good thing for a dad, to be present, active, and reinforcing the boundaries. How many arguments are going to happen tonight, Jim, on the pillow with mom and dad as they put their heads down in bed, and they're saying, honey, you have got to be better at that? How many moms will be saying that to their husbands tonight?
Sure.
And it's a common conversation.
It is a common conversation. And you know, one of the other aspects of this, it's not just with discipline, but it's in so many ways, is, what I learned from something you had said was, you know, you're a busy guy, and yet you've discovered the secret to giving your sons what they need most from you. And actually, it's kind of different. You know, one, it might be feeling them by touch, by, you know, give them a big, noogie on their head, or, a hug or whatever. And yet, you have to talk about it. So how do you figure that one out as a dad?
Well, I think, the brilliance and the joy of my life is to sit in front of really wise people. When we have you on, and Gary Chapman and the Parrots and others who talk about marriage and parenting, I can see how you glean wisdom from people that know what they're talking about. Gary Chapman talking about the five love languages of your children. It's very applicable. So I have one child, Troy. He's all about hugs. I mean, that boy, when he wakes up, and he will probably do this until he's, 35, he comes down, he jumps in my lap as I'm sitting in my chair, and gives me the most wonderful hug and says, I love you, Daddy. Mm. And it is a brilliant moment. It's something I look forward to. Trent, on the other hand, will come down. He's more introverted. He's more of a scientist in his demeanor, and he's better at this, but when he was younger, he was like cardboard. I'd have to go out of my way to say, I love you, and I'd hug him. I mean, now he does it, but he had to learn to express himself that way. Trent would be more the guy that wants to sit and have a deep discussion with you and go a mile deep. And that's just knowing your children. And you know what? That's part of it. Being in relationship, you want to know your child well enough to communicate in the language that really sparks their interest.
No, exactly. I can remember you and I having a conversation about studying the culture so we can be more effective, but we also have to study our kids, and they are different. When you were saying that, I was thinking about my daughter Heidi, who's my youngest. My other two girls would let me kiss them on the forehead and tell them I love them and do the mush thing. She gets to a certain age and she says, "Dad, quit kissing me on the forehead. You could give me pimples on my forehead."
And that's true.
Exactly. So it never dawned on me that, you know, my kiss was going to, you know, be a concern to her facial complexion, but you know she's
you're a slobbery kisser, obviously.
That's what Kathy says, so I don't know. maybe I am. Hey, you did something. I underlined it in your book, and you said if mom makes the boat, dad hoists the sail. What did you mean by that?
Well, I think again, it's that idea that moms are really consistent. They do everything so well in that middle space: nurture, presence, time, connection with the children. I mean, it's very rare to hear a child or a teenager or a 20-something say, "I really, you know, my relationship with my mom was really strained in a bad, bad way." It's more typical that you hear that about dad, and that's what I meant by that. And in terms of the sail, so mom's the consistent kind of the boat, the one that doesn't leak, you know. Yeah. But dad is the one that brings the edge, the sail, whether it's a small sail or a big sail. And depending upon your relationship with your child, that's what you're creating in your child's life, the ability to soar or just the ability to trek along and hopefully not to sink the boat. And I think fathers have that kind of influence in a child's life.
Yeah, that is so, so important. Hey, we don't have much time left, but I actually want you to tell us, our listeners, who I'm sure also are excited about listening to Focus on the Family, but I want you to tell us a little bit about what's going on at Focus on the Family. As you know, I believe so strongly in what you do and what Focus is doing. Tell us a little bit about some of the incredible, incredible things that are going on with your ministry over at Focus.
Well, I mean, there's some good things that have just happened. One is the National Institute of Marriage. We've acquired that organization, and they were doing about 400 interventions every year with couples that were on the brink of divorce, some of them already signing the divorce papers. And they have a great success rate at getting these couples into what we call intensives. It's where you come for a long four-day period. And the success rate 2 years after couples have gone to this, those couples, 84.6% of those couples are still married.
It's incredible.
And these are the ones that are literally on the brink of divorce. They just have not figured out communication skills and ways to understand each other. And by that immersion experience, they get it. And that's something that we hope thousands of couples every year will take advantage of through Focus on the Family and the National Institute of Marriage. So that's one thing that, to me, completes the marriage effort and the marriage ministry at Focus. In addition to that, we're doing so much in the media space. You know, we just released a while back Irreplaceable. Mm-hmm. We have the Family Project curriculum out now. And as we move ahead, we're going to do another movie in the next few months called Dropbox, about adoption, handicapped children, a brilliant story, actually produced by three USC film students.
Wow.
And we were able to acquire the film. It's going to be a barn burner. So the power of media and getting in the cultural space there, telling stories that are powerful, provocative, and God-honoring. And I think that's one way to reach the culture when we talk about family. And then just, again, the normal parenting effort when we talk about the important role of a father and trying to get dads better engaged with their families. If we can do that more successfully, 1%, 10%, 50%, the impact on culture will be phenomenal. And so for that reason, those are the things that excite me every day when I get up and run into work.
Well, I'm excited that you're excited about getting up every day, because you have done a phenomenal job as one of the key leaders in the family ministry movement. I'm so grateful for it. In fact, the National Institute of Marriage, if people aren't aware of it, I hope they can learn more about it. I send people there all the time. Actually, Bob Paul, who is, you know, one of the key leaders there and wonderful person, says, thanks for sending these people. And they come back different. It's a pretty incredible experience, as well as the Family Project. I hope every church in America does the curriculum, the Family Project, because it's powerful, it's life-changing. And anyway, what you're doing at Focus is phenomenal. And let me wish you a happy Father's Day. Thank you for the book, The Good Dad. We love it here at Homeward. And Jim, thanks for being with us. We appreciate you so much.
Jim, it's so good to be with you. Thank you so very much for everything you're doing with Homeward and in really impacting people's lives day to day. Thank you.
Can't think of a better way for us to celebrate Father's Day than by having two guys that America loves who are great dads, Jim Burns and Jim Daly, having a conversation about becoming the father you were meant to be. Again, Jim Daly's brand new book is called The Good Dad. We have it up at Homeward.com if you want to take a look at it there. And while you're at Homeward.com, be sure to browse a while. And now for Dr. Jim Burns, our engineer Ben Camp, and the rest of the staff, I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks for joining us today here on the Homeward Broadcast. And from all of us to all of you, happy Father's Day. Homeward with Jim Burns is a production of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University.